This is Build and Analyze, a weekly news and discussion show about the world of iPhone, iPad, iOS, and mobile web development. This show is hosted by Marco Armit. He's a creator of Instapaper, WeDon'tSay.com. And I'm Dan Benjamin. Today, it's an off day for us. It's Thursday, September 20th, 2012. This is episode number 95. I'd like to say thank you very much to our sponsors, Gazelle.com, Squarespace.com, Hover.com, and a new one, Treehouse. Treehouse teaches you about online web design, web development, mobile app development, how to start a business, and more. And they do it with these very, very cool online classes. They're super affordable, no contract. You just show up, take the course you're interested in, you're done. Get the skills you need, and you make some money. That's it. Make some money. Why not? And they're going to give you 50% off their first month if you use this special URL that also, by the way, supports the show. It's teamtreehouse.com/join/5x5. Check them out. I also want to mention, of course, we have the lovely Bandwidth sponsor, Igloo Software, your digital workplace. It means you can give updates, have discussions, and share files with your team all in one place. They got a cool URL too, igloosoftware.com/5x5. Go check them out. Hi, Marco Armit.
Hi, Dan Benjamin.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Would you like to do a show today?
That sounds good.
All right, let's
begin. Yeah, it's been a while, you know, because we moved the day this week, so it's been like a week and a half.
Yeah, it's been a long time, but that's all right. More to say.
Yeah, big week, huh?
Huge week.
So, iOS 6 is out. Do you have it yet on your phones? And your pads and your various other devices that have funny names?
Yes, I have. I have installed it. I had been using the beta on my iPhone, and it did not recognize any update when I plugged it in. So I'm assuming that's a problem, but I'll address it later.
Do you have the GM installed from last week? Or
I don't know.
Okay. When was the last time? Either you installed it a week ago or a month ago.
So
if it's a month ago, you have the previous version.
Okay. I need to do something.
Yeah, you should before it expires. Then you have to do a full restore instead of just an update.
Yeah, I'll do something. Yeah,
I would say do that today.
All right.
So iOS 6 is out, and the iPhone 5 will be out tomorrow. First of all, did you order an iPhone 5? I haven't listened to your show with Jim yet from yesterday. So
No, I did not order it. I was in Portland, Oregon, at the XOXO Fest when they were pre-announced.
And you're always traveling, Dan.
I know. And I did not have the opportunity to place any order for anything. So I have not ordered anything, and I'm not going to be waiting in line, and I don't know when I will get it.
All right.
Yeah. So.
Cool, yeah.
I know you pre-ordered it.
I did. I woke up at 3 in the morning because we have a baby who has not been great at sleeping for the most part in the last month, it was not that hard for me to just set my alarm for 3 in the morning, wake up, take 10 minutes to order it, and then go back to sleep. Because I was already, chances are I would have been up anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly if I wasn't going to be up at 3, then I would have been up at 4. So
yeah, who cares? What's an hour?
Doesn't really matter.
Just 1 hour.
Yeah. So I woke up at 3. I ordered it. I woke up at like 2:57. And just refreshed the page a lot. And then once it came online, I had already done the eligibility checker earlier that day. So I already knew exactly what phone number that it was for, what the price was going to be, what my discount was going to be, which was like a half subsidy because AT&T sucks.
Mm.
And
you had nothing to think about. You just had to go through the motions.
Right. And so my order confirmation email is timestamped 3:07 a.m. And then it seems like right after that, it started failing for everybody. In fact, even while I was ordering, I had to log in with my Apple ID like 2 or 3 times because it accepted the order, and then it's like, all right, log in to check out to get all your billing information and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that login of logging in with your Apple ID was what was erroring out for me during that process. But then I, on the third try or so, it worked and I got through.
It's got to be frustrating for people who really want to do this and it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And that's, then I heard. So here's what I heard. Tell me if this is true. I heard that there are a lot of people who went to Apple. The early, early people like you were able to actually get to buy it. And then very quickly, and I've heard different numbers. I've heard an hour. I've heard 3 hours. I've heard 5 hours. But that shortly afterwards, even the people whose orders were getting through, it was coming up and saying delivery in 2 weeks.
Really? That's, well, I heard that was if you ordered it like an hour afterwards, like at 4 a.m. Mm. Say. But I don't, I think the problem was shortly after 3 a.m. And I think I probably caught the very beginning of this. Shortly after 3 a.m., everything just started failing. Mm. And whether it was Apple failing or AT&T or Verizon's eligibility systems failing, who knows? In the past, it's kind of been a mix of both. So, yeah, so I don't know. But regardless, I'm getting one supposedly tomorrow. I hope it works when it arrives.
Yeah.
I don't know how it works. Like, I was thinking about maybe... if AT&T's LTE proves to still be horrible, maybe I would try to like exchange it at an Apple store for a Verizon one. I don't know if they would do that.
I don't think they'll do it.
I mean, I know I could return it, but then like, do I have to wait 4 weeks to get it, to get the Verizon version?
Yeah, I think you would.
I think you're probably right. So I don't know if I'll do that. I really feel terrible about still being an AT&T customer, but yeah. it's such the more practical option for me because Verizon doesn't work in my house. And I know they have those little microcell or femtocell things. I actually bought one for a family member once before, so I've worked with them before. But I just don't want that complexity in my house because it's fine as like a last resort. Like I can only get Verizon service for whatever reason, so I therefore need this one spot to work. But in my case, AT&T works okay, and it doesn't work exceptionally well pretty much anywhere. But it works okay everywhere. And I have, you know, I long after I switched to the iPhone, I had Verizon EVDO modem still. First I had a little USB one, then I switched to a MiFi. And I've also had the Verizon versions of the last two iPads. Mm-hmm. So I've been a Verizon data customer for almost this entire time that I've been using AT&T for the iPhone. And I'm very familiar with where Verizon doesn't work in my area. And it's not, you know, it's not clear cut to just say, oh, I can just switch to Verizon, it'll be fine. Like, I really can't say that. So, I know AT&T's flaws, you know, like the devil, you know, like, I know where AT&T doesn't work. Typically, with my current setup of having an AT&T iPhone and a Verizon iPad, I can get connectivity anywhere. And I know that if both of them were on the same carrier, that wouldn't be the case. Also, there have been a couple of times where my home internet service has gone out. And I know because when I've tried to use my LTE iPad to to, you know, hold me over for tethering until I get the internet service restored at home, it just doesn't work. Like the Verizon iPad has like pretty much no service here. It gets, you know, one bar at best, and it keeps toggling between 1X and EVDO and LTE, and yeah, it's a mess. Whereas my AT&T iPhone during those times provides pretty solid tethering. And even if I got the Verizon femtocell for my house, that wouldn't work if my internet connection was out. So I see the AT&T iPhone as kind of a necessary evil for me for practicality reasons. So I hope... Well, I mean, in theory, I could flip it and get the LTE and get the AT&T iPad for those purposes, and then the Verizon phone, the Verizon femtocell. But that's a whole lot of shuffling around for what would be a questionable gain for me. So anyway, sticking with AT&T, even though I hate them. I want to talk a little bit about iOS 6 first, and then I'll get back to the iPhone 5 stuff a little.
iOS 6.
Yeah, officially out yesterday. Dropped support for the iPad 1, which is big. And what?
No, it is. It's just the way you say it. It is good. But then, so how long does Apple usually support these older devices?
I think a pretty good benchmark is something like 2 years, but it varies. Like, they haven't really been that consistent about it. The iPad 1 was sold until a year and a half ago. It was sold until, you know, like 2 Aprils ago.
Right.
So even though it was released, you know, a year before that, it was sold for a year. So you kind of have to look at it that way. Like, okay, if you went to an Apple store and bought an iPad and bought the current newest iPad, up until a year and a half ago, that was the iPad 1. So those people now can't run the newest software. There's going to be a whole lot of apps, including many of Apple's apps, that won't run on their iPad. Things like, well, like iPhotos have never ran on it, but like some of Apple's own apps, the iWork apps, they Apple tends to push those so that they always require the latest version of iOS. So there's a lot of apps now that if you have an iPad 1, you can't use. And for something that you only bought possibly as little as a year and a half ago, that costs $500 and up, that is not on a contract and is not on an automatic 2-year, you know, throwaway and renew cycle like most phones in the U.S. are, that kind of sucks for those people. So I think this was a little aggressive against the iPad 1. However, I also know that the iPad 1, it was hard to support for lots of reasons because it only had that 256 megs of RAM. And for a device that size, you know, like the 3GS, they still support, sort of, and it only has 256 megs of RAM, but it doesn't have that big of a screen. So a lot of its buffers, a lot of its images are much smaller, so they take up less memory. The 256 RAM limit on the iPad 1 really, really hurt it for this purpose.
So, now you can, by the way, you can jailbreak your iPad 1 and you can install iOS 6 on it, but this
really?
Is, yeah.
You I can, wouldn't recommend that.
No, you can't. But if you jailbreak it, then you can, as this article that I put into the show notes says, you can inject new life in it. So the poor people who can't use iOS 6 can still do some amazing, I guess, things with it. It's not totally dead.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't recommend doing that.
You're not going to jailbreak your iPad?
I think if you have an iPad 1 and you're really upset that you can't put iOS 6 on it and some of your apps are going to stop working on it as they get updated, I think the best solution is to sell it and wait until whatever this iPad mini comes out and replace it with that.
Now, by the way, we have a sponsor that will buy it from you, but we'll do that
we'll
in a minute.
We'll get to that, I'm sure. Yeah,
there's a thread in Apple support, iOS 6 not compatible for iPad 1? Question mark. And 103 replies, 23,327 views, and you know, people are very upset.
In the chat room, Henrik Pipe G7 brings up a good point. He said, "My iPad 1 will retain Google's Maps indefinitely."
Yeah, there is so a big sad out. They have posted a huge sad Mac OS 10. The you know how you have the Finder happy face? There's someone who's posted a giant sad face into our chat room.
Oh, yeah, I see. Loads of various... Ning is still around? Remember Ning? That was like, it's like the social network generator, basically.
That'll
you can
never
have your own social network for your own little interest group or whatever. Anyway.
So by the way, if you want to read these articles and you want to follow along with us and you want to see how to jailbreak your iPad 1 to inject new life into it, you can go to 5by5.tv/buildanalyze/95. That's where we will be posting the links.
Yeah, really. Like, and I think a lot of people with iPad 1s now, like I think this is going to be like, you know, a month of anger for them until Apple announces the new iPad mini thing, whatever that, you know, whatever that ends up being, whenever it ends up coming out. It's probably going to be pretty inexpensive. You know, I've been assuming in my head that it's going to be either 250 or 300. And as iPads go, that's very inexpensive. So if you could sell your iPad 1 for like $200, say, which is probably not unrealistic. If you could sell your iPad 1 for like $200 and you know, get an iPad mini for 250 or 300, that's way faster and better in lots of ways. Then I don't think that's that bad of a situation to be in. But of course, you know, it still does suck that you're in this situation kind of forcibly, but... you know, we have to look at the time, what could Apple have done differently with the iPad 1 and to make it last longer? And I think the only real answer is they could have added more RAM, but I'm guessing that would have made it very hard to hit that price point and it would have negatively affected battery life. So I see why they didn't.
Let me just do the first sponsor now. I know it's a little early.
Yeah, this is a good
but
time.
But it's a perfect time because you're saying if you could get $100 for it. All right, let me tell you about our first sponsor. Our first sponsor is Gazelle.com. What do these guys do? They buy your old iPad. That's what they do. They buy stuff. iPhones, iPads, MacBooks. I mean, you name it. Even other smartphones. They'll even buy your Android phone. I know we get a lot of Android listeners. They go Gazelle.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Gazelle.com. Gazelle. You go there. Even if your iPad is broken or iPhone is broken, they'll still buy it. So I went, while you're sitting there talking, I went over gazelle.com. And it's like you click on the device, and they have a whole list of devices, but they got the main ones up there. And I click on the iPad. It says, what generation? First generation. What shape? Which one? I said, well, it's a 16 gig Wi-Fi one. And they say, what condition? Well, it's in perfect condition. They'll give me $125 right now.
That's actually pretty good.
It's really good. And they pay you with a check or with PayPal. You lock
and they cover shipping, right?
They cover shipping, and they lock in the price for 30 days. All right, so now, hold on. Now, keep in mind, these are today's prices. They might change. So do this now. And I'll just give it, if you got a 64 gig, just Wi-Fi, no AT&T, they'll give you $155 for it. So go there and sell. You can sell your old iPhone. I use these guys whenever I want to unload all my old stuff. I used to try and sell it like on Twitter or on my website. And now I just go to gazelle.com and they send you out the stuff to ship it. They pay for everything. Then you get money in your PayPal. It's simple. And this is a really good time to do it. So gazelle.com. And let's see, they have a special. No, just go to gazelle.com. They don't have a special URL. But they're a new sponsor and we like them, so make them happy. Go give them your old crap.
Yeah, and you know, like...
Even if it's broken, though.
Yeah, like, you know, a lot of people are going to say, oh, well, if I... Like, even somebody in the chat room, Leet Chicken, just pointed out that, oh, you might be able to get more on eBay for some of these things. And that's true. Like, it's a lot like selling your used car to somebody. You know, like if you have a car that you know, you have a few ways to sell it. You can trade it into a dealer, which is least hassle, but you'll probably get the lowest price that way. But you'll never hear about it again. It's like least hassle. You just do it. You don't have to deal with weird, creepy people coming to your house and test driving your car and doing weird things in it. Like, and then people being a pain in the butt about it. Or you can try to sell it privately, where if you do that, you'll probably get the highest price for it, but it's a way bigger pain in the butt. So you have to decide for yourself what that's worth. Gazelle and you know, things like that, like that's an option for you. That's a lot like the dealer trade-in, where it's no hassle. Like you might not get the highest absolute price for it, but it's a heck of a lot easier, and the risks of it backfiring on you in some way because of people being weird, the risk of it backfiring on you is minimal. In fact, it's pretty much zero, right? Like they'll take it. Like once they give you a price, they'll yeah, take it.
That's it. So, that money is yours, man.
So like there's a lot of times when I sell things where the difference between the price of what I could get in a private sale versus what I could get through one of these services is not worth the difference in time and potential weirdness and potential pain in the buttness. So that's how I think I would address anybody complaining about any kind of price difference here. So no, that wasn't part of their spot. Hopefully they didn't mind me pointing that out. But I think it's probably going to be a common objection to people who are very value conscious to look at this stuff. But I think it really is a lot like that, you know, that car difference of, you know, how much do you want to deal with people and the crap that might come along with that and the time it takes to do that. Anyway, so going back to iOS 6, first of all, if you're submitting an app update for the new iPhone 5 or for iOS 6 fixes or both. Apple has staffed up app review like crazy. And because, you know, they know that there was going to be a huge influx of people for both of these things.
How when you say staffed up like crazy, is this your suspicion or you know this?
I know this.
Okay.
And it also seems like they might be working overtime. So, as far as I can tell, they worked through last weekend and, you know, so anyway, if you submit an update that contains only iOS 6 and iPhone 5 fixes and nothing else, and if you make note of that in your release notes, you seem to be fast-tracked. It seems like they are prioritizing those.
Because a lot of the release notes, when I went through and like updated over the last, you know, day or so, a lot of those just said iOS update and compatibility for iOS 6. That's all they said. Not even the word bug fixes, just compatibility updates for iOS 6. And you're saying that this is like a known thing for iOS developers somehow.
Correct. Yeah, I know it. Now I'm telling everyone else they know it. And I'm not the first person to know it. Yeah, like if don't try to play fast and loose here and try to sneak in new features and, you know, big new things and just say, oh, iOS 6 fixes. Like that's a dick move and Apple probably wouldn't appreciate that if they noticed. So yeah, like if you need to just submit fairly minor updates that only add this compatibility for either the iPhone 5 or iOS 6. And if you just say that in the release notes, there's a very good chance that you will be approved within a couple of days instead of, you know, 8, 9, 10 days like normal. And so it does seem like they are plowing through this, what is probably a massive app review queue. They are plowing through it pretty well. And I, so far, I haven't heard from any other developers who've submitted such a fix where it wasn't approved within a day or two. So like some of them are even like 8-hour approval times. It's crazy. So I submitted Instapaper and it took 2 days. Very happy about that. So it does seem like Apple has, you know, when they first released the iOS 6 GM last week, I made a blog post basically saying like, I'm really scared about app review times for this because this is coming out in a week and the iPhone 5 is coming out a few days after that. And there's going to be so many apps submitted for updates for these devices and this OS that it's going to take weeks and weeks and weeks to get anything approved through app review. And so far, it seems like Apple recognized that threat as well, and they prepared for it, and they're plowing through. And it's very similar to what they did when the Retina iPad came out. It was a similar type of timescale with similar fast review times. That it seemed like they really staffed up for Retina iPad updates. And if you submitted back then, with that reason, you probably got through pretty quickly too. So anyway, also there's some low hanging fruit here with iOS 6. The Smart App Banners feature. If you have a website for your app, which I assume you do because you're a nerd, if you have a website for your app, iOS 6 has this new Smart App Banners feature, and I don't know if they went over it in the keynote, but now everything about iOS 6 is public, so it doesn't matter. David Smith with no underscore finally wrote something about this. All right, good. Now I can stop linking to other weird sites.
Wait, where'd you find it?
In the chat.
Oh, okay, there he is.
Yeah, here, I'll add this to the show notes,
yeah.
Which are a real thing.
They are a real thing.
Yeah, it's very, very easy. Don't forget, David Smith, you forgot the affiliate tag information. All right, if you just look at Instapaper's markup, I have an example here of what to do if you have an affiliate tag. Just look at the way I did it and copy mine. And if you really forget, you can leave my affiliate tag in there, but or you can put your own in there. Yeah, I put it up last night. It's very, very easy to do this. Very easy. It's literally it's one meta tag to implement this. And you don't need to set anything up. You don't need to register for any kind of ID or anything. It's very, very easy. So do this. It will probably... And the reason Apple is adding this, you know, one of the biggest reasons they added this is to make web developers finally have an alternative besides popping up those terrible JavaScript alert dialogues saying, go install our app right now. Okay, cancel. You know, those are awful. So I love that they're leaf blowing during the show.
I think it's great. And you and John Siracusa are like...
I know. I sound like John Siracusa now.
Aren't these your guys? Can't you go out there and crack some skulls?
It's kind of a weird arrangement with them. I don't want to get into it.
Are they threatening you? We're going to clean your yard. We're going to take care of your yard work.
And
you're going to pay us every month. Like that.
Yeah, it's mostly like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is New York.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, there's so many things I could say. All right. So yeah, definitely get a Smart App Banner up on your website. That's a no-brainer. They also have a cool feature with which is talking about the documentation where if somebody launches your app from the Smart App Banner, like I said, if you already have it installed, if they launch your app from that banner, from your website, you can pass in an argument for a URL to call to your app's local URL scheme. So if you want to like replicate the navigation between your site and your app, if your site is showing like, you know, the inbox screen, you can have the meta tag for this thing have like a reference to the inbox URL in your local URL scheme. And then you can launch that and then it brings up your app with that argument. So your app can then show the inbox screen. So, and this makes, you know, they give the answer or they give the example here of like Yelp. I think it makes more sense for something like that where like it's an online search for some kind of directory thing. And then you can click this thing and go and view that exact entry in the app. You know, that makes more sense. But so like I didn't use this feature for anything in Instapaper, but who knows if I will in the future. All right. Next issue with iOS 6 The Xcode 4.5 release that was issued with the iOS 6 GM. This is the version of Xcode that is required to build anything with the iOS 6 SDK. So anything that uses any kind of new features in iOS 6, or anything that I don't know. Yeah, maybe just limited to that. Anything that uses the new features in iOS 6. And pretty much anything that you want to submit to the store in the future, I'm guessing. You have to build it with this version of Xcode. However, without some really weird hacking and side effects, this version of Xcode cannot build ARMv6 binaries. And what this means, there's two things. One, the minimum iOS version that you can require now is 4.3. You can no longer build for 4.2, 4.1, etc. And that also means, without ARMv6 support, that you can no longer build a binary that runs on the iPhone 3G or the third generation iPod Touch, or second generation, I forget, second generation iPod Touch. And if you were already requiring 4.3 or above, you already had that restriction or that requirement. But now they made it so that you cannot build something that both uses iOS 6 features and runs on the iPhone 3G. For most apps, I think now that doesn't really matter. I think there are few enough of those devices still in use and still functioning. And there are few enough of those that it shouldn't be that big of a deal to just drop support for that. Personally, I required iOS 5 as of earlier this year, and I got pretty much no pushback about that. Nobody really seemed to complain. And I'm so happy I require iOS 5, because there's so much nice stuff I can use there that without iOS 5, you know, it would be a pain in the butt for me to develop. So anyway, I think it's interesting that Apple is really pushing this forward, that, you know, they're making it so that you pretty much, even if you want to, you can't support these devices anymore. And temporarily you can kind of hack around, but, you know, it probably, it's going to be hard for you to support them now. All right. Let's talk about the iPhone 5. Oh wait, let me go back a little bit. Now that before we finish iOS 6, okay. I want to talk about the maps issue.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, before we jump to the phone, let's talk about this, because there's a lot of discussion on the web these days. A lot. Over the last, it's all of the journalists who haven't been able to talk about iOS 6 have been thinking this stuff, and they're like ready. So the big controversy now, the big thing with iOS 6 is maps. Because if there's anybody listening to this that doesn't already know, if they've been living under a rock, Apple divorced Google, and they came out with their own Maps application.
Well, all we know is that Apple and Google got divorced. We don't know really which direction that went, or if it was mutual or what.
Well, yeah, that's what I said. But Apple came out with their own Maps, so they've got their own Maps now. And apparently here in the United States, it's pretty good. It's all right. But everywhere else in the known universe, it's horrible. It's the worst application. It has no detail. You can't find anything. The entire UK has only two roads in the Maps application, apparently. It's a mess. But here in the US, I think it's fine. What has your experience been?
I haven't used it that much, honestly, during the beta period. Mostly because I didn't have iOS 6 on my main iPhone until fairly recently, maybe, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. So I don't have that strong of an opinion on it. However, I do know that when I have used it, I can tell like some things are not as good as they are on Google Maps. There's no question about that. In a lot of ways, it's a downgrade. I do think it's important to keep in mind what John Gruber wrote the other day, which is, we don't necessarily know if Apple had a choice in this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because we know that they had a contract with Google to use Google Maps. We know that contract was up for renewal, and it wasn't renewed. And we don't know why it wasn't renewed. We can speculate, and we can say, oh, Apple wanted to dump Google and become independent because Google's been angering them, and et cetera. And certainly that's likely. But it also could have been that Google refused to renew it. You know, if Google can say, oh, look how crappy iOS Maps are, and that makes Android look better, then maybe that was worth it to them. You know, so we don't really know why this change was made. You know, we have these guesses. So I wouldn't necessarily say that we should blame either Apple or Google definitively for this. However, it sucks for the users. Regardless of whose fault it is or what happened, it does suck for the users that there were these this really good map before that's now not there anymore and replaced with a map that's not as good. I think, and there's a lot you can complain about. You can complain about, personally for me, I find the biggest problem to be the lack of Street View. You know, flyover is nice, but flyover doesn't help me figure out what this place looks like that I'm going to help me find it more easily. I did try the turn-by-turn directions, and I don't know if I mentioned this in the show, but it was still under NDA, so I probably didn't or shouldn't have.
Yeah, held it in.
But I tried the turn-by-turn directions a couple of weeks ago, and I tried them just with my iPad, because I had iOS 6 on there first. So I had it on my iPad, and I was in the car, but I had the iPad just sitting on the passenger seat. I wasn't looking at it. I was just listening to the directions. And it is not made for this at all. Believe me, no matter what they say. It would do things like, I would have like, you know, one turn followed quickly by a second turn, and it would tell me about just the second one. And if you're looking at the screen, it's obvious what you should do because it shows you on the map. Oh, draw this line. Oh, you follow that little curve there, and then you go over there. But if you're just listening to the directions and it says, turn right ahead, and what it really meant was bear left at a fork and then kind of turn right, like if you don't see the map on that, then it's very misleading. So I only test drove with it twice, and during those trips, I missed like four turns. Whereas using, like my wife's car has a built-in GPS thing, and using that, it doesn't have that problem. First of all, because you can see the screen, but also because it tells you, like, bear left ahead, then turn right. Like, it's good enough in its audio directions to tell you complicated things like that.
Yeah.
The turn-by-turn in iOS is not that good. It cannot handle that. I found a lot of streets that it wouldn't even try to pronounce, and, you know, it's not great. I'm glad it's there. It's better than nothing, because before we had nothing. So, it's better than nothing. But I would say definitely it certainly is not ready for audio only navigation. The map that it's drawing, you know, the actual map it's drawing looks good and is seemingly correct for me, at least for my route, but who knows about the rest of the world. But for me, the map it's drawing was fine. The directions were fine. Just the audio call outs for the navigation were not accurate enough. But it does suck for the users to have this feature be taken away. And the YouTube app too. That was a similar situation. That was also a deal with Google that had expired, was up for renewal, and it didn't get renewed. And again, we don't really know why, but we can speculate. It certainly does seem like Apple is probably the driver in distancing themselves from Google. But Google really, you know, I'm sure they're going to release their own Maps app pretty soon. Because Google needs to be on iOS. They need all these people. They need our eyeballs for their brand. Google, they need us. They need our data. Because that's what Maps is based on. Maps is a giant ad. And people don't realize that necessarily. But, you know, they have sponsored listings in Maps. Local search is a really big, common part of search. And Maps is Google's main entrant into that. It's a really big deal. They need our data. They need people on iOS to be using Google's services, which is why it's more likely that Apple was the driver behind the divorce. But what this means is that Google will probably offer an iOS Maps app of their own shortly. Because no matter what, you know, even though it is temporarily convenient for them that this is making the iPhone look bad and Android look better, I think the idea of losing all that local search business is way more important to Google than how a couple of press articles view Maps versus their phones. So I don't expect this difference to be here for very long. And I got a question related to this from, oh boy, from Joe Masarowski, maybe? Marco, I was disappointed when I listened to yesterday's Amplified number 24, and Dan and Jim didn't address the lack of public transit directions and timetables in iOS 6 Maps. I realize living where they do, public transportation just isn't as important as it is in the Northeast Corridor where I live. I know you don't commute daily anymore, but do you agree or disagree that this is a pretty big feature for some people not to have on their new iPhones? It's not just about having to check individual transit agencies now. Google Maps is able to connect them. One app used to plan your connections between Amtrak, New Jersey Transit, and Long Island Railroad, for example. Not a big deal if you're planning ahead, but a pretty big deal when your plans change during the day and all you have is your iPhone. I do think the lack of transit directions is a big deal, but I never really got into them myself because I guess when I first started trying to search for them, they didn't have them yet in the Maps app. And so I quickly just switched to dedicated apps for that. And by the way, I think the best New York subway app by far is iTrans NYC. And I met the guy who makes it. He's a really nice guy. But, you know, I think relying on individual apps for this is better in most ways, with that exception that it can't really, you know, if you have to switch between different providers, it can't really handle that. You know, it's not going to address that for you. So if you have to switch between two different railroads or a railroad and then a bus system and things like that, that's going to be problematic. Otherwise, I don't think it's that big of a deal, but I could be wrong. I could be underestimating how many people were using that. I don't know. What do you think about that? Do they have public transit in Austin, or is it pretty much just like cowboy hats and cars? No, trucks. It's trucks, of course.
People here drive.
With Confederate flags in the back. And
people here drive.
Big gun rack in the back.
Not here in Austin.
No?
Mm-mm. No, people drive here. That's how people get around. People, if you're in downtown, you walk. And if you're lucky enough to live in downtown, and you're lucky enough to like be able to walk around to other things, then that's what you do. But most people drive everywhere. So driving directions here are fairly important. My experience with Maps has been, I've been using it exclusively for all my driving direction stuff for a couple months, I guess. And here it's been great. Super great. Tells you exactly when to turn, tells you exactly the name of the road. Some of the ways it says the roads are pretty funny. It'll spell things and, you know, that kind of stuff. But it's been very, very accurate. And walking around Portland, downtown Portland, it was pretty good.
Well, that's good. All right. So, yeah. So that's basically what I have to say on Maps. You know, I think it temporarily sucks. I hope it's just temporary about it sucking. I hope that Apple does add make the map data better. And if there's any other company they could buy to get Street View, that would be awesome. I'm sure they're looking into this, but the flyover thing is not a replacement for Street View at all. I wonder if they could partner with Microsoft, because I know Microsoft first had a flyover thing with Bing Maps, and I don't know how that relationship is going. Like, I don't know if Apple would, if they would partner with Microsoft on that. Who knows? Anyway, that's Maps. YouTube, I think, is similar. I think the YouTube app was not great, but decent.
Mm-hmm.
Google did make their own YouTube app. It's out, right?
Yeah, it's out.
And doesn't everyone hate it? Isn't that?
Well, they hate it because I think it has ads in it now.
Right, right.
That's why people would hate it.
That's the thing too. Like, you know, Google wasn't with Maps. They did have sponsored search results in recent versions of iOS, although not very many of them, and they weren't very prominent. With YouTube, I'm pretty sure Google had no ads in the YouTube app before. Isn't that right? There were no ads in it.
No, there were no ads because it was Apple's app, and
right.
I'm sure that Google, you know, missed its wonderful ads and
right.
wanted them back. And I think, you know, as part of what has been going on with Apple and Google's breakup is, you know, we see the fallout with Maps and we see the fallout with the YouTube app.
Right.
Now, so, do you think we will see a Google Maps app coming soon?
Yes, I definitely think we will see it. I don't know if it'll be soon. I definitely think we will see it. I don't know how good it will be or what restrictions Apple will place on it. So that's going to be interesting to see. Like, there might be like a serious Google Voice kind of issue with this where Apple won't let them do certain things. So we'll see. that could get ugly. And you know, it does suck for the users that this split is happening, you know, just like divorces suck for the children. Like, you know, like the users are kind of caught in the middle here where the users don't know about the politics between these two companies necessarily. They almost certainly don't care. What they do care about is they're going to upgrade their phones to iOS 6 or they're going to buy the new iPhone tomorrow that comes with iOS 6. And suddenly they're going to be able to do less with the Maps app than they could do before. And that really sucks for them. Like, that sucks as a user. That's a terrible position to be in. And no matter how Apple tries to spin it, the fact is their new Maps data and feature set is not as good as the old one in most ways. And people are going to see right through that. They're going to see that, and that's going to be a problem for them. It's good that the new iPhone is, by all the reviews so far, really nice. That's going to help the transition a little bit to kind of distract people a little bit. But I do think that the Maps thing is really going to hurt for a while. And certainly, you know, the tech press has latched onto that like crazy, because it turns out that when a new iPhone comes out, as Consumer Reports learned 2 years ago, when a new iPhone comes out, you can get way more attention for your site and get way more page views if you insult it and say it's going to fail or say it sucks than if you say, oh, it's really nice. Because insulting the current hot thing always gets attention in lots of things, not just tech. And so I don't know how much of the iPhone 5 quote backlash is related to that, or how much of it is people actually being disappointed by this thing they haven't used yet. I don't know. It certainly does seem like people like Consumer Reports and a lot of the tech press are just so addicted to the page views that they get by insulting every new major Apple release, especially the iPhone, which is Apple's most important product. They get so much attention from that's now like the usual thing to do. Like, every time Apple's going to release an iPhone, I bet they're going to find something to pick on about it. And by all measures, it sure looks like the iPhone 5 is an awesome product so far. And it just seems like it's getting so much more criticism than iPhones used to get for what looks like the best iPhone ever. It's kind of weird. And, you know, part of it is, I think, unrealistic expectations. Like, what do these people want from a new iPhone exactly? Like, what?
They don't want refinement. They want a whole new design. That's what people want.
Well, and what they mean by that is they want a whole new external design. Who cares what the inside looks like? Who cares what the software runs? Because they don't care. Obviously, they don't. What they want is something new and different. And it's like spoiled brat children. Like, oh, show me another trick. Show, like, what else can you do? And what, you know, would a unicorn suffice? Like, what else do people want from this? And I think even the iPhone name, the iPhone 5, even that, I think, was kind of bending to these people. You know, I really am disappointed that it's called the iPhone 5, but I kind of see why it is, because consumers and especially the press had already given it that name anyway. They had ever since last year when the 4S came out and everyone complained, this isn't an iPhone 5, and it's many of the same complaints. You know that it looked the same from the outside, so therefore this isn't a new phone, even though the 4S was a pretty big improvement, it turns out, over the 4. And you know, the public, the press, they'd already basically decided that if Apple did not release something radically different and call it the iPhone 5, that it was a huge disappointment. So I think Apple had to call it that, and they recognized that, even though it doesn't make sense, because even though it's the sixth iPhone, and they've only ever used a number that represented the generation once on the iPhone 4, and there was no iPhone 1 or 2 or 3. So yeah, I think the iPhone 5 name is kind of a failure of society right there. And then the fact that it wasn't different enough to satisfy so many of these people, I don't know what else they wanted. They changed the screen size, for God's sake. The first time they've ever done that in 5 years. They changed the screen size. It's the and by the way, we should point out, this actually is a very innovative phone, because by all measures so far, it sure looks like this is the first LTE smartphone where using LTE does not cost any battery life. Is that generally accurate? Like,
yeah.
Are there any other smartphones yet that use this new low power chipset and that have good enough power management in other ways where using LTE does not have a penalty?
No, and that's been the most amazing thing coming from the people who have had this. Like, I talked to Jim Dalrymple about this yesterday, and he was saying, in his anecdotal experience of using the iPhone just the way that he's been using it, in other words, he had his 4S, and then he got the 5. And he had LTE turned on. I asked him, I said, you know, what apps are you using? What notification services are you using? What location service? He had all the stuff turned on, just using the phone the way he would regularly. He says, I said, is battery life about the same? Is it a wash? He said, no, it's better. And this is with LTE turned on.
Right.
And he's been using it for a week.
And the new A6 chip. At first, everyone didn't really know what it would be. And then, you know, people did some digging and then people ran some benchmarks. And it turns out that this is a custom Apple chip design. I mean, you know, it's still ARM, but it's like a custom Apple chip design that is kind of a variant on the Cortex. I think it's a variant of the A15 now, or maybe it's still just a variant of the A9. But they somehow managed to get like twice the performance out of it for what seems like no power consumption penalty. And part of it was a die shrink. But as Anantech pointed out, this performance difference, for even with a die shrink, to have this much performance increase with no additional power needs is really remarkable. It's really impressive. So obviously, Apple has a really nice chip here, and I expect the A6 to be in the next iPad, and maybe with some GPU changes, but maybe an A6X, who knows? But it sounds like this is a really good chip. So once again, they've done something awesome with no downside, basically, just like LTE. Like, this thing, LTE was available before, but it had this big downside of needing lots of power. And it was only very recently that this chipset came out that didn't need lots of power. So Apple's taking advantage of that. They already have great power management in the platform to begin with. So again, it's like it's doing these things that it isn't the first smartphone to have LTE or the first smartphone to have a fast CPU in this generation. But it might be the first one to do these things with no downsides. And so, you know, if you look back, the original iPhone blew everyone away. You know, the original iPhone came out, blew everybody away for months, for years even. But it wasn't the first smartphone. It wasn't the first smartphone with a web browser. It wasn't the first smartphone with even a graphical web browser. It wasn't the first smartphone that could play music and other media and videos. But it was the first really great smartphone at doing those things. It was the best one at doing those things.
Right.
And it did those things so well compared to what else was out in those days that it dramatically increased the rate of people that did those things on their phone. Like, you could browse the web on smartphones before, but very few people did because it sucked. You could play music on smartphones before, but very few people did because that sucked. So the iPhone came out and did these things that, and a lot of what the iPhone did, it really was the first to do. But these core functions of, it's a smartphone that can browse the web, and, you know, do, like, it wasn't the first thing to do those things. But it was the first smartphone to do those things well. And so if the iPhone 5 ends up being the first smartphone that does LTE well and still has a great battery life and isn't the size of a brick, that's a good thing. That is innovation. That is remarkable. If the A6 chip manages all this performance with no battery life issues, really, or, you know, not massive heat issues, that's great. That is innovation. The design of the thing is, from all accounts, ridiculously nice. It feels great. People are saying they can't believe how nice this thing feels, how the build quality of it, the lightness, the thinness. Those things are innovation. The materials science that goes into this, those are innovation. Like, and people don't really, the tech press ignores all that because they're so obsessed with these stupid feature checklists. And, oh, why didn't Apple blow us away some more? Dance, monkey, dance. Seriously, it's crazy. Like, the attitude that these people have is completely unreasonable. Like, seriously, what do they expect? Would a unicorn be enough? Or would they complain that the unicorn didn't support NFC? Like, seriously, these people are being unreasonable in so many of these cases, so many of these reviews I read, it's ridiculous. And it just and also as John Gruber pointed out, like the disconnect between what the professional quote reviewers say and the response in the market is growing. Like people are buying this thing like crazy. People cannot wait to get this thing. They're going to sell an insane number of these phones. The 4S, which was a, quote, disappointment by all the same people, was the best-selling iPhone of all time, again, and was the number one selling phone in the country for, I think its entire life, until maybe like last week or sometime recently. I think like 2 weeks ago, the Galaxy S3 took that spot, but for a year, it was the best-selling phone in the U.S. That's amazing. And the iPhone 5 looks like it's going to be just as big of a hit. And so I really don't get this backlash at all. I just think that all these sites are proving how far away from what people actually think and want they really are. And by the way, this is not about The Verge. I can't imagine. I don't know who these people are. Like, are they trying to represent consumers? Are they trying to give people an opinion on products that will be useful to them? Because a lot of times it seems like they're not. A lot of times it just seems like they're getting page views. It's really. I don't get this. I feel like I'm an alien here. Like I feel like. Who are these people? What is going on here? Like, what don't they see? I that's usually like an immature view. Like, oh, everyone else must be messed up. You know, usually that's wrong and that's immature. But I really have a hard time getting past this here. I don't get what these people are thinking when they write these things. Now, part of it is certainly the anti-Apple culture, and a lot of these writers don't like Apple. And I keep meaning to write about this. That's understandable because. There's a lot about Apple that rubs a lot of people the wrong way. And that's fine. I get that. You know, Apple's whole attitude is we know better than you and we're going to put in pretty tight controls that a lot of times you are not going to like. And we're going to do this because we think it's better. We know that we know best. And that's it. And if you don't like it, there's the door. Right, that's basically Apple's product attitude in a nutshell. And for many of us who use Apple products, we see all those, we see that, and we accept it because we agree with what they think is best, or we at least agree with most of it, and we're willing to tolerate the other things that we don't agree with. But that whole attitude of we know best and we're going to control these things more than you might want us to puts a lot of people off, and that's understandable. I totally get that. I totally get if you know, a lot of people do not like to be told what to do. They don't like to be told what's best for them. That's fine. But it seems like those people are the ones who are assigned to write stories about the iPhone, which I don't think is really that fair or that helpful to people who are looking for iPhone information, honestly. I don't know. I don't get these people.
Can we do our second?
Let's do it.
All right. Squarespace.com. Everything you need to make an amazing website. Fully hosted. Completely managed. Everything you need. I've been telling people about this. It's everything you need. You want to do a blog? Fine. I'll do that. Make a portfolio? You can do that. Want to make a website for your iOS app? You can do that. You want to host a podcast? You can do that. They got templates that are amazing. Really amazing. And they're responsive. You can go in there, you can customize it, you can tweak it. You can use their drag and drop stuff. You can integrate with the social services you use, like Twitter, Facebook. They got really, really good analytics built in. It's all built in. If you know HTML and CSS, yeah, you can customize things. You can tweak things. You can put your own code in there. You can do whatever you want. Or not. If that's outside your wheelhouse, as you would say, Marco, then you don't have to do any of this stuff. You just use the stuff that's built in and you arrange it the way that you want. And if you have a problem, they've got award. I don't know how they got award-winning customer support, 24/7. They respond in minutes. And they also have these really cool live online workshops that walk you through step by step whatever you need to make a site. I mean, they've got tons and tons of resources. You're not on your own with these guys. And what's really, really great is that you can send this out. You can build a site and you can then go and deploy it right to your customer, your client, whoever it is. And then you don't have to worry they're going to break something. So listen, here's how it works. $10 a month. Standard plan. $20 a month for the unlimited plan. Sign up for a year, you get 20% off. 2 years, 25% off. In both those cases, you get a free domain. And if you use the code DanSentMe9, because this is the month of nine, DanSentMe9, you'll get 10% off whatever you do over there. So go check it out. Squarespace.com/5x5. Support the show.
All right. I have a couple of developer-related things. First of all, this kind of got buried in all the iPhone stuff, but Google, I think last week, released this J2OBJ-C compiler, which is a Java to Objective-C compiler. And everyone talked about it for about 10 minutes and then forgot about it. But basically, the idea is, and a lot of people didn't really read what they said. I put the link in the show notes, what this thing actually does. It does not, and they say specifically, it does not do anything with cross-platform interface code. So you have to write your UI in native code. But it's made to have, you know, if you have like a whole chunk of quote, business logic code in your app, like the whole underlayer of everything, you can write that in Java and have the same code run on iOS and on Android and I guess Java toasters and whatever else Java runs on. There's been some backlash against this, and I think it's deserved because, generally speaking, using bridges of Syracuse County and tools like this are usually just out of laziness, honestly, or disrespect for the target platform. You know, programmers are very, very closed to new ideas more often than they should be, and oftentimes when they're presented with a new platform that they have to develop for, laziness takes over, and they use the laziness sometimes subconsciously to judge the platform and say, "I don't need to learn that language. I'll just use what I know, and I'll port it over somehow, or I'll build an interpreter for what I know, or I'll build a cross compiler for what I know, or I'll use one. And so I don't need to learn Objective C. I'll just use Java because I know it and it's enterprise ready or whatever." And so they often use this attitude to just avoid doing work for themselves on new platforms. And this doesn't usually work out very well. You know, the code generated by these things is not very good. It's often extremely inefficient. It often has side effects or incompatibilities that might not become apparent until later. Apple could change the rules at any time and prohibit this. It's usually not a good idea. Now, that being said, if you're going to use one of these tools, the place to use it most safely is where they are using it, which is kind of the back end of your app, not the interface. That's not that bad of a place to use it if you're going to use it. However, I still think this is not a good idea to use these kind of tools. I think that if you really want a good app for a platform, you should write it in native code. And, you know, none of this, like, write once, run anywhere crap. That's a myth that we've disproven over and over and over again in our industry. That does not work. You really need to focus on a platform that you're going to run on. You can't just say, "Oh, well, I'll just kind of crap this out from my existing platform and won't pay attention to it." Somebody has to own that. So, you know, like, I don't care about Android, so I hired somebody to care about it.
Like, right.
I didn't just, like, you know, run this through a cross compiler, which doesn't exist, but supposing one did, you know, I didn't just run it through a cross compiler with my iOS app and say, "Oh, here you go. That should work okay." You know, because it wouldn't do the platform justice. And I'm not going to support a platform if I can only support it that way. So, and I think a lot of this overlap, you can also look at the whole Facebook HTML5 thing, where Facebook thought that doing HTML5 stuff for the majority of their app's interface would be sufficient, and then therefore would be cross-platform, and they would save them a whole bunch of work, and they wouldn't have to use Objective-C for much. But that obviously was a very big mistake for them. That backfired horribly. They said as much. Zuckerberg said as much last week to Mike Arrington, of all people. anyway, I shouldn't comment on Mike Arrington. So, you know, it's important, and I've said this over and over again. If you're going to write on a platform, use the native tools, use the native language, use the native interface widgets and interface code. If you don't, your users will be able to tell. Your app will not feel right. It will not feel high quality. Always use native stuff. Okay, moving on. voiceover.
Yeah.
This is important. I don't know. I've talked about it before on the show here and there. I don't know why people still have such trouble making good voiceover implementations in their apps, because it's so easy, especially with iOS 5. It is so, so easy. So here's the thing. If you are a developer, triple tapping your home button should turn voiceover on. That's it. I don't know what else you have that mapped to. Do you have triple tap mapped to anything?
No.
In yours?
Mm-mm.
Okay, most people don't. You can map a few things to it in the system. Map triple tap home to voiceover on and off if you're a developer. Simple as that. On your iPad and on your iPhone. Whatever devices you do most of your app testing on, whether it's your primary, in my case, it's my primary device. It's my personal iPhone, my personal iPad. Triple tap home turns voiceover on and off. And every time you make a new interface in your app, test it with voiceover. See if it works. Every time you have some kind of gesture that your app requires, test it. Because it is so easy. Usually, an app that has bad voiceover support is only bad because they didn't give labels to their custom buttons. So if you use a built-in iOS button or text field or anything, voiceover will do a pretty good job reading it normally with no effort on your part at all. If you make a custom button that's, say, an image and has no text, then you have to tell VoiceOver what it should say when it gets to that button. Now, I have here on my iPad, I hope I don't regret doing this.
I have here on my iPad.
So.
And what? Why would you regret it?
Well, we'll see.
Okay.
Hopefully I won't. All right. So here's Instapaper. Triple tapping home.
VoiceOver on. Instapaper. Update. Button.
All right. Now I'm going to swipe and go through the interface a little bit.
Search. Button. Read later. Folders. Edit. Button. Read later section. The experimental archaeology exercise program How to Spot a Psychopath. On How to Spot a Psych. The experimental archaeology
I exercise this article.
Program how to Spot a Psych. Org link by Dan on September 1st, 2012.
Okay, and then I can read the article.
Nice. Okay. This is big.
Messages.
All right, now I'm back to the home screen. I'm going to go launch my competitor's apps.
Opening test apps folder.
Okay, let's do readability first.
Selected. Readability. Reading list. Button.
All right, let's go through the interface a little bit.
10. Dimmed. Button.
What is that? Okay.
Article list. Edit BTN day. Button.
What?
Article list. Search BTN day. Button. Selected. Economist.com. 2M okay. Tracks. Rania. Log. Read up tracks. Rania.org.
Okay, let me open
Coyote
this article.
Tracks. App tracks. Rania. Does. Design iOS to make. He responds to his take while Apple does
okay,
Coyote
tracks.
Okay, I can
scroll through the article. Okay, that's good so far. I'm going through the text. Let's see. Let me get to some of the controls here.
Google Maps.
What?
Maps. Google. It's not Apple's job. Link. As an engineer.
Okay, that's interesting.
App, tracks, link, Google Maps. Link, Google Maps. Maps,
what?
Google Maps. Link.
That's a weird
tracks,
place to be stuck.
Coyote tracks, Apple.
Okay.
Apps does.
All right. Okay, how do I get back? Because in readability, normally the way you get back to the list is you swipe to the right. But in VoiceOver, swipes do something else. Swipes move between controls. So there are things you can implement that override this for your app in VoiceOver mode. So let me see. How do I get back to the article list in readability? Let me swipe to the right. Oh. Swiping doesn't do it. That just goes between paragraphs. I keep swiping. Maybe a two-finger swipe? Maybe the scrub gesture? Nope, that doesn't do it. As far as I can tell, once you are in an article in readability, You can't get out of it in VoiceOver mode. You cannot go back to the article list screen. There's no way to do it. Unless I'm missing some gesture. I looked up various VoiceOver gestures to try here. I cannot figure out how to do it. Okay, so you're stuck in an article. That's good. All right. Let me try Pocket.
Double Pocket button.
Oh, button? What does a button do? Let's see. Okay, well, let me swipe. What does this button do?
Button.
Huh. How about this?
Button.
Oh, that's interesting. What about this
button.
One?
Button.
Huh.
Button. Button.
What is it?
That's the topmost
Login.
Button.
Vatican 1616 JPG. Image.
Uh-huh.
URL.
Oh, that's good.
Tags. Search text field.
Text field. That's
double
that's,
tap to edit.
Oh, okay. To edit what? Yeah.
Button. Button.
Yeah.
Button.
This is what your app sounds like.
Button. Button.
When you don't
Button.
Implement VoiceOver support on custom controls.
Button. Button.
Now, I'm sure they're going to fix this now that I've called them out on it. This takes like 10 minutes to fix. Seriously, it is not going to... Readability has a different issue with their gesture handling. That'll take about 20 minutes to fix. But Pockets will take about 5 or 10 minutes to just put labels on these controls. It takes no effort at all.
VoiceOver off.
All right, triple tap. There is no excuse for developers to have that bad... And by the way, I haven't mentioned this because I was kind of selfishly, I didn't really want them to fix it. Because I kind of wanted to see how long they would go without fixing it. Pocket's been this way since they launched this past spring. So has Readability. Both of those apps came out this past spring. They have both had this broken of VoiceOver support since then. They both have full-time staffs of many people who can fix this in 10 minutes. And by the way, I mean, I don't know the Readability people, but I know like the Pocket engineers are good engineers. Like, I don't know why. It's not like they don't have the skills to do this, but developers don't know. You don't know about VoiceOver. So that's why map Triple Home to VoiceOver and use it regularly with your app. Because if you are visually impaired, this makes a huge difference. A lot of times, it's like in the case of Readability, like you can't even go back to the article list. A lot of times, this makes the difference between whether you can use an app or whether you can't. And Apple's devices have the best support for visually impaired users. I don't know. Am I supposed to say blind? I honestly don't know.
What the...
I'm trying to be as non-offensive as possible. So I'm going to say visually impaired. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if blind is an offensive term. So I don't. Anyway, it is so easy to support this. It will take 10 minutes for them to fix that. But for 6 months they haven't done it. There's no excuse. It is so ridiculously easy. So just test it with VoiceOver. Familiarize yourself. It'll take you 10 minutes to familiarize yourself with how VoiceOver works, with the swiping and double tapping and all the various gestures. You can look up pages online that will tell you what all the gestures do, how the rotors work, etc. It's really very simple. And it makes such a big difference. It is, and I haven't always been perfect with this in my apps. I really should point this out. There have been a number of times where I have shipped updates to my app that have either included unlabeled controls or have somehow, or like if you're swiping through one of the most common pitfalls, which I used to suffer from in my app and which both of my competitors suffer from, is if you have controls that are hidden by default, like in mine, it's those swipe buttons where if you swipe a table cell,
right.
I show you those three buttons that come in. Those are members of the view. Before they're shown, I just slide them over. And so the VoiceOver doesn't really care whether they're visible or not. If they're in the view, it will, as you swipe through the different VoiceOver controls, it'll read the hints for those too by default. And in iOS 5, you can have accessibility containers that you can then turn off to prevent that. And that's why it's easier with iOS 5 to support this stuff. That's one of the most common things is like you have controls that are off screen that VoiceOver is reading when it shouldn't. And but again, it takes 10 minutes to fix. Really. It really is so easy to fix this stuff. And no one's perfect. Again, I've shipped VoiceOver problems before, but as soon as I heard about them, not only did I fix them quickly, but I was embarrassed. Because once someone tells you this stuff, once you get called out on this, and I've been fortunate enough that I have customers who tell me, customers who were using VoiceOver who say, you know what, this is broken. Or in this new update you did, you took a step backwards because there's all these controls here that weren't here before. I'm very lucky that I have my customers who tell me that. Not everyone will have that luxury. So you have, and I only have like two or three people who tell me this. So you have to take this responsibility for yourself, because if a blind or visually impaired user can't use your app, they're probably not going to take the time to tell you about it. They're probably just going to not use it. And that's no good for you. It's no good for them. They're not going to feel good about having spent money on your app if it costs money. You know, it's not good. And this stuff is just so easy. So if you have bad VoiceOver support, it should be embarrassing to you. Just as it was embarrassing to me when I messed mine up. And you should fix it so quickly because it's so easy. All right. I think I'm done with my VoiceOver lecture for today.
All right. Do we have time for a third sponsor?
Absolutely.
Hover.com, simplified domain management. And you've probably gone in and registered a domain with a company. The company just wants to sell you stuff. They upsell stuff. Hover doesn't do that. I've told you about that before. But you know what the thing I want to tell you about today is with Hover.com. And this is actually, when I look at what I've done with Hover.com, I've actually done more transfers from the other registrars to Hover than I've done probably new registrations over there. Why? Because let me be honest, once I started using Hover, I said, you know what, I'll try. I tried it with a couple domains. I liked it. Then I started to transfer stuff over. And then I really liked it because they make that whole process simple. Every time I'd say, well, I've got this new domain over here with Hover, and I like their management. I like the way everything is set up. I can change the DNS. I can do whatever. They don't bug me too much. So great. Hover's really cool. And then I'd have to go and, oh yeah, I got a new server. I need to update the DNS. I'd go into Hover and say, oh yeah, that domain's not there. It's over at this other site. And I have to then wade through all of their steps. And even just to get in there, they're trying to sell you stuff. So I would wind up transferring stuff out. Well, we have a promo code, 10% off. It's Dan sent me. When you register, I'm sorry, when you transfer your domains, you get 10% off of that too. And what's cool, when you transfer, people often think, well, I got to wait till the end. That's not how it works. You don't have to wait for a domain to expire in order to transfer it. When you go to transfer a domain, the domain is going to add a year on to what's already left. So you don't lose that time. You don't start over. It's not a year from that. It's beyond that. Go check it out. Anyway, go over to hover.com/Dan sent me. That'll automatically give you 10% off. They have this domain name valet service when you transfer too. They can do the whole thing for you. So go check it out. Hover.com, use the code Dan sent me, 10% off. Love those guys. And thanks everybody who's been registering with them. They told me yesterday that you guys have been really great and trying them out, and that means a lot to us. So keep doing it. Keep checking them out. Thanks so much to Hover for making this show possible.
All right. There's a question from Neil North, which fits in this week pretty well. He says, there are a lot of app developers, which he capitalized for some reason, around now, and this puts a lot of pressure on the app approval process. Thousands of apps end up in the queue each day. This can be quite frustrating at times, as it can quite easily take over 7 days for your app to get reviewed. And if your app gets turned down for something small, you have to sit in the queue all over again. If Apple offered a priority approval service to developers, which meant your app would get reviewed within 24 hours, any day of the week, including weekends, for a higher developer program fee, would you sign up, and how much would you be willing to pay for such a service? And do you think it would be a good idea? Okay, so I think this always, people have been talking about this since the App Store launched, what, 4 years ago? You know, obviously this isn't a new idea. Oh, let me pay more and jump the line. You know, it's my business and I'll get above all these hobbyist people or whatever. It's a very common idea. I don't think it would be good. And I think the way Apple does it now in its own twisted way is fairly democratic. And if you added another option above, let's say, you know, instead of paying $100 a year, let's say you pay $2,000 a year for this priority service or whatever it would be. It might even be more than that. Who knows? What this does is it creates tiers. You know, it creates these like segments. This is our first class developer, and you're our second class developer.
Right.
And that's not good for morale. and I think a lot of people would really object to that. And then what that does also, we see this. I saw this a lot with when Vimeo launched Vimeo Plus, and that was also about 4 years ago. you know, Vimeo is an online video service, much like YouTube, but way nicer in a lot of ways, and targeted at different uses, more like, you know, more filmmakers and artistic uses, and, you know, less just uploading, you know, video game trailers and stuff. And a while ago, Vimeo decided to monetize by offering a pro service. And this offered a bunch of benefits, including you would get first place in line in the transcode queue. And what happened, now I signed up for Vimeo Pro or Plus, whatever it was called. Plus, I think. Anyway, I signed up for it for like 6 months, and then I let it lapse. I didn't renew it. And what I learned afterwards really turned me off of Vimeo entirely. Because every time I would try to upload a video after my Plus membership expired and I was back like in the regular people pool, I noticed the transcode times kept getting longer and longer and longer. And in an effort to bolster their Plus service, I guess they weren't really investing much in keeping things fast for their non-Plus users, because, you know, once there's an incentive, you know, once Vimeo says, well, we can make more money if people upgrade to Plus, their incentive is therefore to make the situation for non-Plus members suck enough that enough of them will be convinced to switch to Plus. And even if they never thought about it like that diabolically, like even if that was never a conscious motivation in their head, oh, let's make this suck, the forces are such that, you know, the incentives are set up in such a way that they really don't have any incentive at all to significantly upgrade their non-Plus queue. And so that could be a negative effect if Apple did the same thing. And that, again, that angered so many people from Vimeo that a lot of people stopped using Vimeo entirely because of that. And I have my own reasons for not really using them anymore, but they've annoyed me. Vimeo annoys me in a lot of very small ways over time. That all added up to one big annoyance that I said, you know what, forget it. But they, you know, if Apple did this priority developer, priority review kind of system, it would have many of the same problems. And by the way, even if Apple, and, you know, they wouldn't make a lot of money from this based on their revenue, that, you know, an extra couple thousand bucks from a developer here and there wouldn't really make any difference at all. But then, like, you know, it creates this class system which should piss people off. And then anytime app review delays start climbing, even for like, quote, legitimate reasons, like, you know, like a new OS release and they have a huge influx, even when the delays start climbing, then people will start blaming this. They'll say, oh, well, Apple's just being greedy. They just want people to upgrade to their Plus accounts. You know, even if the negative will on Apple's side is not there, people will still attribute it to them. So it just creates these awkward, bad situations that would only make Apple look bad. And so I think the system they have now, where everyone's on the same playing field for the most part, I think that's way better overall. You know, and it, no, even though we think, oh, I would gladly pay to jump the line, I think the reality is that would cause more harm than good. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you make some good points, and that's the tough part, is more harm than good is probably the best way to say it. And this is where I think people would kind of, this is where we'll get email.
You mean this is where you'll get email?
Well, right. I mean, what do you think? What's the opposite point of view? What do you think people will email me about?
I'm guessing you're going to hear from a bunch of angry Vimeo people.
Yeah.
For one.
Yeah.
Saying Vimeo doesn't suck. Why does it annoy Marco?
Yeah.
And by the way, I never said it sucked, but it does annoy me in a lot of ways. But yeah, I don't know. Again, there are so many developers, myself included. If Apple offered the service, I'd buy it, no question. There are so many developers who would say, I would jump at that in a heartbeat. But everyone who didn't jump at it, it would make them feel a lot worse. And I don't think that's worth it. Oh, I also wanted to point out something too. On a number of press outlets, and also on In Beta this week, your podcast with Gina Trapani and
Kevin Purdy.
Kevin Purdy, yeah. God, I always forget his name. I'm so sorry, Kevin. they mentioned how, like, you know, how the iPhone 5 screen change kind of caught them by surprise, and Gina in particular being, you know, being an iOS, I don't think Kevin is an iOS developer. I think he's Android only, but Gina has an iOS app. So you know, she was talking about how this caught her by surprise and she had like a week to hurry up and submit this difference. Did this really catch a lot of people by surprise? I mean, so first of all, I mean, I'm sure there are some developers who it's catching by surprise, but I think if you're so in the Apple ecosystem, if you're paying attention so much to it that you'd want to submit your app within that week to be there on day one, you've probably been hearing about the tall screen rumors for months.
Yeah.
And even last month, these people figured out how to hack the iOS simulator from one of the betas.
Right, to make it...
To run yeah. in tall mode.
So you could see what your app would look like.
In that eagle and giraffe mode. And so... No, that's what the variables were called.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's like eagle was the width and giraffe was the height.
Nice.
So it's like giraffe mode of the tall iPhone. And like, you know, we all who were like paying attention to this stuff should have seen that. And so... You know, a month ago, we had a pretty good idea that the next iPhone screen was going to be taller. And a month ago, a little, actually more than a month ago, it was like August 6th or August 7th where they released this information. We got a way to test our apps with this. So, granted, we couldn't really, I mean, and starting with then, we could start implementing the support. But, you know, until last week, we couldn't actually build and submit a quote final version of our app with the support. So admittedly, part of this is being rushed into a week, but it really shouldn't have been that much of a surprise to most developers who were really paying attention. And if you weren't paying attention enough to this, you know, where it did catch you by surprise, then again, then you probably won't really care if you aren't there on day one with support for this. So I really don't think it's that big of a deal. And certainly for some apps, it's going to be harder to make this adjustment, especially like if you have basically a non-fluid interface. So for Instapaper, it was very, very easy because most of my interface is based on relative numbers and referring to the screen size rather than just making like a fixed width rectangle, and you know, everything's relative, you know, because like your app already has to, even before this, you have to be a bit vertically flexible to account for the in-call status bar and like the tethering status bar where the status bar becomes twice as high and your app gets squished a little bit. You have to be vertically flexible in some way anyway. So if you were already doing that, then this really wasn't that big of a deal. And so Instapaper ran almost perfectly with only a few minor adjustments on the new iPhone. So it was very easy to port that. Because I have that kind of layout, but it would be more difficult if you have an app where, for one thing, if you have like a full screen sized skin or like one big texture that like for very heavily themed apps, that could be more work. Or for apps that don't have like a middle stretching area, like if your main content area in the app isn't stretchable in some way, like the way table cells and web views are. Things like if you have like a simulated mixer, say on screen, because you know about mixers, so they're full of like knobs and sliders and stuff. Well, there's a bunch of apps that also simulate that kind of interface. So if you have that, like you can't just like stretch the middle knob to be three times wider and have it look okay and work okay. So apps like that have a problem, and they are more work. But I bet most apps aren't that hard to make this change for, and so that's why I think it's really not that big of a deal. And I really don't think it should have caught most people by surprise.
I don't know who was really caught by surprise.
Hey, you want to end it? I think we're good.
You feeling good?
I'm feeling good. Yeah, I we did an hour. I think that's good. I don't want to go too long and turn into John Syracuse. I already had the lawn crew here earlier to be my Syracuse resemblance for the day.
Yeah, I mean if you could go another 90 minutes.
I don't know if I can. I think I'm going to want lunch by then.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up. So you can go to twitter.com/MarcoArment, A-R-M-E-N-T, to follow Marco there. You can go to alpha.app.net/Marco to follow him there. And I am Dan Benjamin and Dan in those two places as well. You can go to marco.org to read what Marco has to write. And he writes quite a bit there. Let's see. You can go to 5by5.tv/BillDanilan/95. see all the show notes and links and things that we added. And, of course, we appreciate you listening. Please consider giving the show a rating in iTunes. It's the best way to help new listeners find the show, and we love new listeners. Thank you very much to our sponsors and for you guys for listening. Thanks, Marco. Have a good week.
You too.